Okay, thank you everyone for joining. I think we'll go ahead and get started with the DAC4 RFO webinar. Angela, I think I'm kicking it over to you.
Thanks, Annie. Appreciate everyone joining the call. As you all know, we'll be going over the DAC4 RFO, Bidders Conference today and the topics that we have today. So moving on to the next slide, just a quick intro. We'll have, an intro and overview of the overall program and expectations of this webinar and solicitation. We'll provide a summary of the two separate DAC programs. So there's the Green Tariff Program, the DAC-GT plus the CSGT. We'll then move over to the evaluation and selection portion, Exhibit B documentation that's required. And then we'll open it up for Q&A if folks have any other questions. So with that, I'll go ahead and pass this on to Mark.
Thanks, Angela. My name is Mark Bergender. I'll be on the team administering these two RFOs, and I'll be walking you through some high-level information about the processes. So first of all, the introduction and purpose of this presentation. We are launching, or we launched last week, the DAC-GT and CSGT RFOs. And the purpose of this presentation is to provide potential participants with information and the needs identified for this 2021 DAC-GT and CSGT RFOs, as well as to help everybody understand the RFO process and how to submit bids. So some housekeeping items. If you please remain on mute. I think with this webinar, I think you're forced to stay on mute, so that's not a problem. As Annie mentioned, if you have questions, please enter them into the chat and we'll have time at the end to address them and or add them to the FAQ, which will be posted on our website. And you can find a link to that website there, that first URL. As with all of our RFOs, we will be using Power Advocate to host these events. There are two distinct events for each RFO, and the links for each of them can be found there. You do need to register on Power Advocate to participate and to submit offers. And it's a fairly straightforward process, but if you need a guide, it's at the last link there as well. A comment here about document conflicts. This presentation is intended to be a summary level discussion of the information and requirements established in the RFO materials and does not include all the detailed info in those RFO materials. As such, to the extent that there are any inconsistencies between this presentation and what is in those materials, those RFO materials will govern. Capitalized terms used but not defined in these slides are defined in the materials we've posted on the website. As with all of the RFOs that SCE engages in, we have retained the services of an independent evaluator. The IE for these two RFOs is Axion Group. Sherry and Harry's emails are listed there. Purpose of an IE is to perform an independent review of the proposals and a detailed review of the utility evaluation and selection process. The IE monitors all communications between SCE and offerors, and if not copied on any emails between SCE, will make sure that they are included in our follow-up communications. Lastly, the IE has access to all bid data, so they see everything that you send to us, and they evaluate the process, and then they submit a report at the end. Next slide, please. Another note here on supplier diversity. We encourage DBEs, diverse business enterprises, to participate in solicitations and RFOs. GO 156 established the requirements for development of programs to increase participation of DBEs in procurement contracts from utilities. If you need more info on this, there are a couple links there on the SCE website. Also more info on the CPUC website. And guidance is also available at that energy procurement URL under the heading Help and Guidance. A note on GO 156, SCE has goals that seek to work with offerors who comply with the requirements of GO 156 to help meet them, which briefly are as follows: participate as a qualified DBE, which is considered a tier one or direct contracting with SCE. Participate as a qualified DBE subcontractor, tier two. And then if you are a DBE owned company, you can register with the CPUC Supplier Clearinghouse at the link there. Disabled veteran owned business enterprises in California are automatically certified and recognized in by the Supplier Clearinghouse. And lastly, SCE's supplier diversity efforts include encouragement of its sellers to develop plans to utilize DBE subcontractors. So if you have questions, you can use the information there or you can send us an email. High level overview of the RFO schedule. We launched the RFO last week, September 30th. Today is the 6th of October. We are hosting the webinar for the two RFOs, as you are probably aware. The offer submission deadline is November 1st. That's about 3.5 weeks. That's a Monday. We have established the time, 12 p.m. at Power Advocate, and the offer window closes automatically, and the website will not allow any offers to be submitted after noon. So please make sure you get them in before then. We plan to notify bidders of selection of offers on the 14th of January. We're running into the holidays, so we have a little cushion there. Expected date to provide contract execution is March 3rd. That is contract execution. Expected deadline for sellers to submit executed standard contract is March 17th. And lastly, the date that we expect to submit the advice letter for awarded contracts would be April 18th of next year. Keys to a successful proposal. Firstly, it may seem obvious, submit a complete offer. Carefully read and ensure understanding of the RFO instructions. There are detailed descriptions of what is required and all that information is there. Ensure that your project meets all eligibility requirements specific to these RFOs. There are two distinct RFOs, although they are both under the heading DAC, and they have different requirements, although very prescriptive requirements as well, and it'd be good to understand what those are. If you have questions regarding your offers, reach out to us via Power Advocate. And again, a note, IE has access to all that communication. And lastly, submit all required documentation per section 6.02 of the RFO instructions. Again, everything is detailed there. Make sure your submitted offer is consistent and you provide evidence of a viable project. Consistency here just means that you're providing multiple documents to us in an offer workbook, and it'd be good to check that. It'd be good to check that all the information provided there is internally consistent, so the numbers and names match on things like the single line diagram and the offer workbook. Lastly, this is a competitive solicitation, so we encourage you to consider submitting a competitively priced offer, and price refreshes are not allowed over the course of the RFO. And with that, I believe my time is up. I'm going to pass it back to Angela.
Thanks, Mark. And so we'll move on to the next portion, which is just to provide an overview of the DAC Green Tariff and Community Solar Green Tariff summaries and programs. So moving on to the next slide. Just as a regulatory background, Decision 1806-027 and 1810-007 provide CPUC directives to adopt alternatives to promote solar distributed generation in disadvantaged communities. So that's what we call our DACs. And directs IOUs to implement DAC programs, including program project sizing requirements. Resolution E4999 approved the tariffs to implement DAC-GT and CSGT programs. And then what you'll see in advice letter 4410E outlines our solicitation materials. So these are all pre-approved by the commission. And so when you guys get a copy of this presentation, there are actual links to this regulatory background on our SCE website as well. We have these links so that they're easily accessible when you look through and comb through some of the regulatory background. So we'll talk about the different types of programs. As Mark had mentioned, They're very prescriptive based off of, you know, the direction in the decisions that were stated. And so for the DAC green tariff, it should be known for both DAC GT and CSGT programs, you know, SEE will be responsible for customer enrollment and subscription for both of these programs. So with that, going back to DAC GT, DAC GT offers a 20% bill credit to California alternative rates for energy, care, or family electric rate assistant FERA eligible customers located within a DAC to obtain 100% renewable energy. So they must be CARE or FERA eligible to receive that 20% bill credit on the customer facing program side. And that's all going to be, as I mentioned, something that SEE will be responsible for in terms of customer enrollment and subscription. On the flip side, the Community Solar Green Tariff, the CSGT program, also offers a 20% bill credit to one, eligible residential customers located in DACs within 5 miles of the project site, or SJV, which is the San Joaquin Valley. And just to note, the San Joaquin Valley pilot programs that are identified and specified are indicated in that sub-bullet point, decision 1705014. So there's specific local communities under SJV within 40 miles of the project site to obtain 100% solar energy in their local community that would also be eligible for this bill credit. And then in addition, the Community Solar Green Tariff Program also allows for eligible project sponsors to receive a 20% bill credit for up to 25% of the project's energy output. So there is that limitation and cap of up to what percentage or what 20% bill credit they can get up to. So it's up to 25%. So that's just some background, a little bit more on the customer program facing side. Moving on to the next slide. With respect to the procurement and this RFO, you know, we are required to hold 2 DAC solicitations each year until our program caps have been met. So this is going to be the second solicitation that we hold, and we'll continue to hold these solicitations until we meet that cap that was allocated to us. In terms of eligibility requirements, they're all detailed in the RFO instructions. So I'd encourage you all to note down and really look at Article 2 so that you can understand the different eligibility requirements for each of the programs. So let's maybe focus on DAC GT, which is the Green Tariff Program. What you'll see here is the different types of technologies that are eligible include solar, wind, hydroelectric, biomass, or biogas. In other words, ERRs, eligible renewable resources. So the solicitation target for this is a lot higher. It's 20 megawatts. And we are accepting projects from the range of 0.5 to 20 megawatt project sized. And then in terms of location, you know, it has to be above, it has to fall within a DAC. So what does that mean? We define the DAC in terms of eligibility, it needs to be within the 55 percentile or top 25% statewide, according to CalEnviroScreen 3.0. And so there's a link there for you guys to determine if that site that you guys are looking to develop is in actuality within the top 25% statewide. Another thing is if you're in one of the 22 census tracts that score in the top 5% of the CalEnviroScreen 3.0 pollution burden, but that doesn't have to be an overall score. So there's certain location eligibility requirements when you guys are looking at the project and for it to qualify to be, you know, a part of DAC GT. In terms of DAC CSGT, we're only looking for solar voltaic. The solicitation target is a lot less, 5 megawatts, and then the project size is capped at less than 4.39 megawatts. So it's the same location requirements, but additionally, for CSGT projects only, the San Joaquin Valley pilot communities are also considered part of DACs. In terms of valuation methodology for both programs, we're going to be using least cost best fit. We are accepting energy only or full capacity deliverability status for both the programs. We are also, you know, accepting 10, 15, or 20 year terms. But, you know, if you do submit an offer that's greater than 10, you know, we are requiring that one of those offers be a 10 year delivery term so that we could evaluate you accordingly and fairly. In terms of initial delivery deadline, we are anticipating it takes approximately 36 months, you know, after CPUC approval. So that's part of the requirement. So you have to be online within that time frame, and that's expected because we need to ensure that we have all the right, you know, information and timing. So that we can allow that customer subscription. And, you know, if you guys are anticipating a certain delivery date, we would need to have that done within 36 months after CPUC approval of the contract. Moving on to the next slide. So RFO documents and materials, depending on which program you'll look at, there's a whole slew of different materials that will be provided. The documents that have been provided as a reference include the RFO instructions, a copy of our standard agreement, which is non-negotiable. I'd encourage you all to take a look at that, just because it has all the contractual terms and, you know, it has a lot of interconnection requirements that are just required for you to, you know, continue on with the project. Exhibit B checklist and example, which shows all of the, you know, information that's required in order for us to contract a PPA, so all the supplemental documents that we'll go over shortly. And then the workforce affidavit trainee log. So I'm not going to go over this in too much detail, but there's a lot of requirements in here for DACGT and CSGT, as the team has mentioned, you know, the offer workbook, team development experience letter. There's a non-disclosure agreement that's evergreen, geographic information system and file, environmental review letter, voluntary consent, non-public information, evidence of interconnection, attestation and evidence of site control, attestation of developer experience, and a completed Exhibit B project description are all required for both of these programs. With respect to the CSGT, there's additional requirements there. So we are expecting a sponsor letter of commitment, workforce development affidavit, and workforce development plan attestation as required. So please be sure to, you know, review the standard agreement, the RFO instructions, and all the supporting documentation prior to bidding. Bidders are responsible for being aware of all requirements, obligations of contractual terms and conditions prior to submitting an offer. And exceptions to standard agreement terms and conditions will not be accepted. With that, I'll go ahead and pass this on to Amit, who'll go over evaluation selection.
Thank you, Angela. this is Amit with the evaluation team, helping our friends at the contract origination here. And today I'll briefly talk about the offer workbooks and touch upon the process flow as far as the evaluation and selection is concerned. Next slide. Let's get started with the offer workbook here. Basically, what we do or what we expect in the offer workbook is for you to enter your contact details as well as project-related detailed data. Hence, you can submit these offer workbooks to the Power Advocate website. Starting with the first one, sample offer workbook. This is where you enter the your contact details, such as your address, phone number, etc., as well as project-related information here as far as the longitude and latitude is concerned. That way, we can verify the DAC location. And a bunch of additional information regarding the diverse business enterprise and so forth. Yes, no type of questions that you need to respond to. Next slide. Could you do next slide, please? Yes. This is the other tab from the offer workbook where we start getting into the project related information, where you provide to us whether it's a new project, what the interconnection point is, distribution related costs, your contract capacity, both AC capacity and DC capacity, and your annual degradation factor. Of course, the commercial online date, the operation date, and the terms that you're providing, whether it's 10, 15, or 20 years. And of course, the product price. And the other numbers that you're seeing here, the numbers that you're seeing here is just for illustrative purposes, arbitrary numbers. Next slide. And finally, the offer workbook allows you to enter the generation profile, hourly generation profile, so that we can work with it. During the evaluation process, you enter the annual hourly gen profile here in terms of megawatt hours and indicate whether your outages are included or not in this gen profile that way. We can cross-check it against the details that you provided earlier in the earlier tab with regards to your contract capacity and so forth, and make further assessments regarding the contract benefits and costs. Next slide. Now that we talked about the offer workbook, I'll just give a very high-level overview of the process flow. Once we receive all the conforming offers from you folks, one of the things that we're going to look at is to see whether offer price exceeds the procurement price cap established within this solicitation. To the extent it exceeds it, we no longer consider those kind of offers, as they have to be price cap conforming. But to the extent they are lower than the price cap established by the solicitation, then we go ahead and conduct our least cost best fit methodology and rank the orders based on their net present value and move on with the selection process in the light of that kind of information. Next slide. Of course, during the evaluation process, there are components on both the benefit side and the cost side that we consider in order to do the full-blown cash flow analysis. Hence, we can come up with a NPV value so that that offer or the offers themselves can be ranked. When we are considering the cost, we consider things like the contract payments, which is predicated on the contract price that you're providing and the gen profile, the transmission distribution related cost, if any, debt equivalence, basically nothing but cost of mitigating our long-term commitments as far as SC's balance sheet is concerned. And finally, the renewable integration cost, as these renewable projects add strain on the power flows because of the intermittency. Hence, there's a cost associated with that to curb that kind of grid reliability concerns. On the benefit side, we have the energy benefits, which is predicated on our internal long-term hourly price forecast, as well as the GEM profile that was aforementioned in the offer workbook. To the extent it has the full deliverability status, of course, so we would further entertain the capacity benefits. And that would be predicated on the effective load carrying capacity as established by the commission. And finally, to the extent there's any nodal congestion, that would also be considered. Of course, congestion can be in favor or adversely affect the benefits. In other words, if congestion is positive, it may be to the benefit, or negative, it may not be to the benefit as far as the energy benefits are concerned. So it can swing both ways. And once we combine these benefits and cost components, we can then come up with the net market value and then discount it at our annual discount rate to come up with the NPV. Hence, everything can be ranked and be selected. Next slide. That'll be all. Now I'm going to be passing it on to Will.
Good day, everyone. For anyone who happens to be on the phone and not on a computer, we're on slide 20 and heading farther on. Next slide. Okay, I'm going to talk about what we call Exhibit B, which is the generating facility and site description. So why are we taking time in this webinar to talk about this? Well, it's been our experience that sometimes this is a stumbling block to getting successful offer in the door. So we want to be sure you understand that we expect you to fully describe your facility, provide single line drawing, site plan drawing, a legal description of the site, a map showing where you are in California, you know, major roads and highways. Here's my site. And, you know, why is this exhibit important? Well, we really do expect you to describe what you're going to build. We're going to verify that that's what you built, and we want it to be exact. We want things to match. That's important. Exhibit B is material part of the power purchase agreement. Next slide, please. So generally, you know, I think we've mentioned a couple times we have a checklist in the RFO instructions. I always encourage everyone to take a look at that checklist with your entire team, especially as many of us are working remotely in teams. Be sure your whole team takes a look at the checklist before you push the submit button on your information. So general issues that have happened, and even last year, even last solicitation happened, you really need to make sure that all the names match, that all the documents have the same name, the same project, the sizes are all correct. If it's a 5 megawatt project, make sure all the documentation is 5 megawatts. And another thing that can happen is occasionally the interconnection and the descriptions don't exactly match. And if that's the case, you have an older interconnection study or something, we need to make sure that any changes that you're making are not going to affect what we evaluate as any network upgrade costs or impact your online date, because those are things that are put in the evaluation. So it's important if there's a discrepancy that you know about between your interconnection and description and the description you're providing to us. The other thing that comes up is the site plan drawing, legal description, site map. As I say, the site map is really just where are you in California, so we know generally where you are. It's important to show the boundary of your facility. You know, I usually ask folks, hey, just get the assessor parcel number map from the assessor, outline the parcels you're going to use in red or some other color so we can look at the parcels that you put on your legal list and compare it to the parcel map that you've marked and take a look at the site plan drawing, and hopefully everything all matches, because that's what's important, that it all lines up. Next slide, please. So some more details, the single line and process flow. So these two solicitations, one solar PV, and examples are kind of geared towards solar PV, but we also allow other renewables in this solicitation. So it's important if your project relies on some sort of process like waste management or something like that, or organic digestion or something crazy, that you provide us a little simplified process flow diagram. This describes how your process works. Not just, and then for solar PV, of course, that's, you don't need to do that. The common missing items, you know, oh, I forgot to put down what circuit I'm connecting to. I need to put down all the part sizes and power ratings. I really forgot to allow for station light and power. Oh, whoops. Some facilities have dedicated station service transformer for auxiliary power. Some, you know, projects, that's a small number and it's kind of built in somewhere buried down in the drawing. Just make sure it's there. And for projects like solar PV that might have a tracking system that's powered directly from, you know, small modules on the trackers, just kind of note that somewhere, self-powered trackers or something. metering. Here's another very common misunderstanding. So all of these agreements are going to be marketed to the California Independent System Operator, the ISO, and you're in SCE territory. So you need to have separate metering for the ISO. You need to have separate metering for SCE. You might have a meter for yourselves. You might have a meter for your O&M company. All these meters need to be clearly identified on your documents so that you're aware that they are separate devices. They may need to have separate communication requirements, etc. So make sure you show all your metering on your diagram. The rest of the stuff is probably pretty self-explanatory. Just describe all the parts. So once again, I'll encourage everyone, go to the RFO instructions, look at the checklist. It's a little more detailed than what I've described here. Make sure you've included everything we expect. Label everything, you know, don't just drop something on a drawing and leave it stranded without explaining what it is. And err on the side of inclusiveness. Pay attention to details because we look at the documents very closely. And as I stated at the beginning, we expect this to describe what you're going to build, not what you're proposing to build, not what is preliminary, what is not issued for construction. Don't put any of those things on the documents. Just describe what you're going to build. And confidential statements, take those off. Those are all those sorts of things are covered within the body of the power purchase agreement. The exhibit is just a description of what you're going to build and where it is. Next slide, please.
Thanks, Will.
Okay. Yeah, we're on slide 24 for anyone on the phone. And did you want me to do this or are you going to do this, Angela?
I can take this one, Will. Thanks so much.
Okay. Here.
Thanks, Will. So yeah. with what Will has mentioned, the Exhibit B documentation, we did want to also take some time to just go over site control and supporting documentation. So in terms of site control demonstration, and this is all in the RFO instructions, the site control, the offer is required to submit a map showing a boundary of the site for which offers have control as a part of the PPA. Offerer must provide to SCE an attestation that the offer has site control for the project through any of the following: a direct ownership, a lease, an option to lease or purchase that may be exercised upon execution of the PPA. SCE also reserves the right to request additional information as needed to demonstrate that the offerer has site control with respect to all portions of real property on which the project will be located. So we understand that different projects and different land that's being developed may vary and be on a case-by-case basis. So some situations which may include but are not limited to include, you know, any existence of easements that may affect offers of ability to develop the project, an existence of public roads or other crossings that might require a right-of-way or grant to develop the project. We are going to request additional information in these types of situations if, you know, there are certain easements or other crossings that are there to just ensure that there is that right of way or consent that has been granted by whatever entity is kind of on that property. So again, please thoroughly review all provisions of the standard agreement, as we all mentioned. As Will, you know, Ahmed and Mark have also mentioned, the RFO instructions and all other supporting documentation. Bidders are responsible for being fully aware of all requirements and obligations to the contractual terms and conditions prior to submitting an offer. And that's that. I'll go ahead and pass this on to Annie.
Hi, folks. So if you have any questions, now would be a good time to post them in the chat function, and we will do our best to respond to them now or to post them in an FAQ later.
I have a question, Annie. There could be, like, considering that this is the fourth solicitation you know, has SCE changed its solicitation materials since the last, you know, solicitation? And the answer to that, since the last RFO that was launched, DAC 3, there have not been any changes to the solicitation materials. Just to confirm and clarify. So whatever was posted last year is pretty much the same for this time around. I think we also have another question. So Todd Thorner asked, what GIA processes are acceptable to participate in DAC, WDAT, and Rule 21 for distribution interconnection, and CAISO GIP for transmission interconnection, all okay? I'm assuming, so the way that the PPA is written, Rule 21 is actually excluded. So, you know, the way that the PPA is written, it's really WDAT and that kind of interconnection process for these types of projects. Hopefully that answered your question, Todd. So, I think there's a question why Rule 21 is excluded. I'd have to get back to you, but it's definitely the way that our PPA is written. It has to be interconnected, and usually that's through a WDAT. But what we could do is post specifically and get back to you on the exclusion piece.
Just a reminder to folks that we'll be posting a more thorough response to folks' questions on the Power Advocate site and the SCE procurement page as we circle back up internally. And I see there's nothing from Todd. RFO seeks 20 megawatt max for the DAC GT program. But what is the total remaining for SCE capacity in the DAC program? Has SCE executed any DAC GT contracts yet? Angela, can you answer that one, or we can get back to that?
We can answer that one. So, sorry, the question, RFO 20 megawatts max. I think what we could probably point you out to the website, but what we can share is we are seeking, you know, 20 megawatts max for this time being, because that's part of the solicitation cap that's described. I'd have to double check if we could disclose, you know, how I don't think we can disclose contract execution information. I think we have another question. What is the definition of site control? So site control is indicated in our RFO instructions. So site control, in terms of demonstration of that, you need to provide a map showing that the boundary of the site for which the offeror has control as a part of the PPA is there. But if you look in the actual PPA, I would defer to the PPA in terms of site control definition. Hi, Todd. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, what we've seen in the past is sometimes, you know, eligibility requirements in terms of the project being actually located in the top 25% DAC. I mean, as we all mentioned, a lot of these eligibility criteria are pretty prescriptive. And so, you know, we do double check to ensure that your site falls within a top 25% DAC. And so sometimes the location may be an issue. Sometimes there could potentially be issues of the site itself in meeting the requirements. But I know aside from that, that was one thing. What I'd also want to just maybe caveat is, you know, there's inclusivity and exclusivity of offers. So like if you're saying, if you tell us that one is inclusive of another, and let's say one project is eligible and then the other project isn't, there could be a potential possibility that that project doesn't get picked up, or you know, other situations in that sense, because of the way that the offer is marked in terms of exclusivity. So I'd really maybe encourage folks to really take a look at the offer workbook. And you know, if you guys are marking something that's, you know, inclusive of another project being accepted, you know, that's something just to take into consideration. I think we have another question. Has SE announced any DAC contracts and advice letters which would make them public? I'd have to double check. I think we could get back to you on this one, Todd, in a more formalized response. But there have been, I'd have to double check in terms of what advice letters have been made public in terms of contracting. No problem. Thank you for your questions.
We'll go ahead and wait another few minutes to see if any more questions come in, and we'll post more formal answers to these later. Okay, I don't think I'm seeing any more questions from folks. So if it's all right, we can wrap up. To just a reminder that this presentation will be posted on Power Advocate along with the SCE procurement site, and the FAQs will also be posted on both sites after some review from the internal team. Thank you everybody so much for joining.
Enjoy the day, folks. Take care.